Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 142, recorded March 10th, 2014. Katarina Fake. Triangulation is brought to you by NatureBox, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like Southern Barbecue Sunflower Kernels. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/triangulation. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and you'll get a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan.
Hey there.
Hi, Katarina.
Oh, I see you're already using the app. That's what I like to see.
Of course. In fact, I had an account, which I forgot.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to have it here. And, you know, we're in an area where there's a lot of activity because we're in Sonoma County.
Yes. So are you creating a new note map?
I will.
What are you going to make? What are you going to make
happen? I'm going to talk about TWiT probably, but let me go back here so we can show all the neat stuff.
All right. Love it.
Hi. And congratulations. Last time you were here, you were talking about your last venture, which you sold to eBay.
Oh, no, that's not true. I actually was talking about this venture, which was used to be called Pinwheel.
You were here to talk about Pinwheel.
I was. But
that's why I have an account.
Yeah, but this is the same product. So here's the deal. You know, it's, you know, one of the things that we thought was really important was mobile second. Not mobile first.
For 2 years, you've had a website, and Thursday you released your first app.
Exactly, and it's a location-based product, so it obviously needs to be on an app, and that was the plan all along. And so the counterintuitive thing that we were doing, actually, there was a method to our madness. We were deliberately doing this way because we are, you know, people first, platform second. We are about building a community and then, you know, serving it with the software. So that was why we did it that way.
So the first 2 years on the web were just to kind of work out the kinks or to build the community. But
it was build a community. And also, you know, I think that there's a it's a very common phenomenon, actually, with apps that people will launch them and they'll have, you know, what I call like empty restaurant syndrome, meaning that they, you know, no matter how good your restaurant is, if people arrive and there's nobody there, they'll feel like they're not having a great experience. So we felt that it was very important to build up the community, build up the product. You know, we're kind of, you know, whatever. This is not our first rodeo. We're social media type folks. So, you know, building the community first, I think, is one of the most important things that you can do before you launch on an app. And we were very fortunate in that we had enough funding that we could kind of carry it forward and, you know, have the runway in order to be able to pull off something as, you know, kind of like a community building effort. It takes a long time to build a community properly and a healthy, thriving community. So that's what we've been doing.
Katarina Fake is here. She is far from a fake. She's wonderful and has a new app that is a site that's been around for 2 years, as we were talking about, Findery.
Findery. Yep. And we launched last Thursday.
Are you at South by Southwest? Did you launch for South by Southwest?
No, we launched in advance of South by Southwest. I noticed you're in Petaluma, too. Are you broadcasting from there also? You're not in South.
We used to. We did 3 years there. I did the world's longest crowd surf there. But
were you crowd surfed?
Yeah,
How do you keep your monocle in when you?
Well, it's not easy with a live camera on a stick
and I'm going like this. But I just feel like there's not a lot of news broken there. Although I was wrong because Edward Snowden and Julian Assange.
Well, exactly. But it wasn't necessarily what was expected. You know, like all of the people that were there to market their apps were, kind of overshadowed by the Snowden and right. the Assange appearances. Big, you know, that's big news. So I guess news is being broken.
Yeah, unexpectedly in an unexpected area. But South By was famous for breaking Foursquare for Twitter, really, kind of came out. I don't know if South By made it big, but it came out at South By Southwest.
Yeah, that was like 2006 or 7, I think, was its big year. I think it was 7, 2007.
I think you're right, yeah.
That was when it kind of really, really hit it. No, we decided, Heather Champ is there right now. And Heather Champ, who is a longtime colleague of mine, and she works here at Findry, and she was the original community manager, a person who created all the community stuff on Flickr as well. She is there, and she just got off her panel, so it's too late for viewers to catch her. But we launched in advance, and it was really a super launch. We were featured in the App Store, we were Editor's Choice, it was like all over the place. And we were, we've been in kind of number one in country XYZ. Our launch has been fantastic.
Yay.
So we're really happy. And all of this, kind of laboring kind of, in semi-obscurity in advance of the launch was well worth it. I think that we really, prepared well. And so super psyched.
It is turning a little bit on its head because traditionally the app comes first. And in fact, sometimes there's never a website at all. WhatsApp did very well without ever having a web interface at all. But I guess when you're a mature entrepreneur and you've got funding, you have the luxury of building something on the web first. It is a luxury.
I suppose it is a luxury. I mean, you do definitely need to be able to, finance yourself for a runway like that, and also have we're 12 people. We're here. We're based here in San Francisco. We're in not down in the valley. We're in San Francisco, this city. We're in Hayes Valley, is where our
well, that's just because you like it there. That's the only reason, right?
Well, explain to me why you're in Petaluma.
Well, same reason. It ain't the capital of anything except chickens and eggs. We love it here, and it's beautiful. And so, this is a nice thing. When you get to a certain point in your life, you can say, I've decided I'm going to do the startup in Hayes Valley.
Yes.
This is it. Take it or leave it.
Right. And also, I think it's really important just because Findry is about place. And Findry is about the stories around places. That we be somewhere that there's a lot of stories and where it's a kind of like there's
like
a deep
that.
History here.
Yeah.
This is San Francisco. It's got, everything from, the, 1849 until the present. It's got the whole, Barbary Coast history. It's got the 49ers, all of the gold rush people. It's got the hippies. There's all this wonderful history of the Grateful Dead and Janis Joplin, et cetera, et cetera. And it's got the tech industry. It's got a very rich and wonderful history. And, Findry is really about that. It's about these stories and about, place. So it's wonderful and very important to be in somewhere that, in a place that has that kind of interest and depth.
Last time you were here, you had the web app. We showed that. But let's show the iPhone app. I'm going to show it on an iPad because it'll be a little bit bigger. And it works just fine on an iPad.
It does.
Yeah, this is Findry. You do not have to have an account to use Findry. I think that's nice. That means you can use it right out of the box without going through the process of signing up. You do have a map interface, a map-focused interface. But let me ask you a little bit about this. Google Maps has this kind of capability, doesn't it, to kind of annotate the map? I guess not socially, though.
Not socially. I mean, there is, this is a very user-generated content. I prefer to call it participatory media, social media endeavor. And so the people that are, contributing to this are telling stories about the place and really, I think, bringing places to life in a way that, it's hard to, like, these features exist in other places, but it's harder to tease out. It's harder to kind of, get it out of the application. And that's really our heart and soul. That's really what we're about.
So I do remember now, because I'm looking at the notes I've posted, and way back when we talked to you, when it was still Pinwheel, I think.
Yeah.
I posted this about my first job. And so here's the place on the map that the first job is and a little story about it. And I left it the last time we talked, which was almost exactly 2 years
ago. Most exactly 2 years ago. Yeah. There you go.
You and had just launched.
We had no. This was actually you were in the private beta.
You hadn't even launched.
Yeah, we hadn't even launched. So we didn't launch until October then, and you were getting early preview.
That's neat.
Would you like fries with that shake? This is Leo Laporte. Wait, can you go back to this?
Yeah, you want to see it?
Let
me go back and I'll post. You know, now that you're out on an app, I probably will post more notes on this one. This is that a Google map? It looks like a Google map.
It is. It's coming. These are using Apple Maps on the app.
It uses Apple Maps. Okay. So it's an interface using their API on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you attach a pin, of course, but also you can attach a fairly long story. This is not, you can tell a story.
You can tell a story. Yeah. I mean, the typical note is, longer than a tweet and, shorter than a blog post. It's something that you can read on your phone as you're traveling about. And you can discover all these things about, all the places that are around you. It's a kind of a remarkable thing. I went down to, for example, the Lower East Side of Manhattan. I was staying down there. And I used to live in New York. So I've spent a lot of time down there. And I found this guy who'd left these wonderful notes that were about being a Hare Krishna, which I hadn't known. Like, I actually hadn't known that the Hare Krishna started in New York. And he was one of the very first members, and he had left all these notes around Lower Manhattan, made my entire experience of, the Lower East Side of Manhattan, completely different. I kind of went from place to place. I saw all of these places that the Hare Krishnas had been, his encounters with Abby Hoffman and hanging out in Thompson Square Park, and it was amazing, just really amazing.
That's one use, although I think probably you more than most entrepreneurs understand that you put something out there and then people will make it what they want it to be.
So we just opened it up and people are using it for all kinds of different things. There's, businesses have come on. There's, kind of a real estate company that's really put a lot of effort into building it out, the Corcoran Group in New York. People are using it for, putting down cold cases, unsolved murders. These are
really
the last really interesting use case.
Wow. Yeah,
could not have come up with on our own. There's people that are using them to have their own little geocaching adventures. They'll leave poems in places and then put clues of where to find them, so people will actually go to those locations and find those things. We've got a woman who's kind of on a road trip across the country, leaving notes for her niece.
Oh,
for
neat.
Her niece who can't even go online yet. I'm guessing she's very young, and for her to find someday. There's just people are using them for these wonderful, wonderful uses that we would not have necessarily been aware of. And right now, our VP of engineering, Jed Lau, who's wonderful guy, is traveling right now. He's traveling in Hong Kong and Japan. And one of the really wonderful use cases is for the folks back home. We're watching him go from place to place in Japan, live while he's traveling. It's kind of this wonderful sort of live travelogue. And then when he's done, he'll have this, kind of archive of all of his stories along the way on the road trip.
We're talking to Katarina Fake. Her new, it's 2 years old. It was originally called Pinwheel at pinwheel.com. Now at findery.com. FINDERY.com. And the new iPhone app just came out. Android coming, I hope.
Android will follow. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
We need to, it's a community based product. And so we need to, all people need to be on it. So,
Yeah. I would love to have an Android version of this. And we'll talk a little bit more about Findery and other things. But would you like a snack, Katarina? Because it's time to talk about Nature Box. We get our snacks mailed to us every month.
I snacks are among my top 10 favorite things.
Well, of course they are. Everybody loves salty snacks. They're not always so good for you. Instead of going to the vending machine at work, why doesn't work get a Nature Box? See, Nature Box snacks have no HFCs, no trans fats. They're healthy. You can go to naturebox.com/twit and save 50% off your first Nature Box. But you can also make some selections there. You can, for instance, choose by dietary needs. They have vegan snacks, soy-free, gluten-conscious, lactose-free, nut-free, non-GMO. So you could pick the snacks that you like. I would get a sampler box to start because one of the things we found with our first Nature Boxes is there's stuff that you would never think of in here that is fabulous, like these barbecue kettle kernels, a little sweet, a little salty, and all delicious. The cherry berry bonanza, medley of dried cranberries, cherries, and blueberries. Lots of antioxidants in there, very healthy. And you can see they have the nutritionist approved stamp on here because some of these are more healthy than others. This is the peppery chickpeas. I don't know why, but a nutritionist did not approve of those. However, I do. Leo approved. Actually, they have the sticker on the back, I guess. So many delicious choices in your Nature Box. Visit naturebox.com. Every one of them is nutritionist approved because there's no HFCs, no partially hydrogenated oils, artificial sweeteners, artificial flavors, artificial colors, always 0 grams trans fats. And yet, they're the salty snacks you and your body crave. Look, here they gave me a bonus snack. This is one of my favorites, the cherry ganache granola. It's a chocolate covered granola with dried cherries. It's fabulous. All right, enough said. Just go to naturebox.com/twit. 50% off your first box. A box of awesome should come to your home every single day. Awesome, delicious snacks, better choices than in the vending machine. You'll be glad to serve them to your kids, to your colleagues, your employees. We've got Nature Boxes all over the studio now.
Yum.
We're all happy. Yeah, they're really good.
Happy and healthy.
Happy and healthy. Naturebox.com/twit. Your Wikipedia entry starts with your job at a salon, which was one of my favorite enterprises. Very early 1996 web news sites.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was. Now we're going back.
Way back. Not really, but it feels like, I mean, it's almost 20 years ago. I guess it really does feel like a long time ago.
It really is, yeah.
Former Examiner, San Francisco Examiner folks who decided the web was the future. And, you know, salon's still going strong, and it's awesome.
It used to be awesome.
Yeah, it's still a great resource and kind of web native, which I really like. You know, a lot of places like the New Yorker or the Atlantic, New York Times, trying to figure out the web. The salon started on the web. And the reason I said that you were expert at letting the users decide is the Flickr, which you founded, started off as an online game, which never launched. Was it called Never Ending Game, something like that?
Game Never Ending. It never launched. We had a prototype of it, which we had built. We'd had 30,000 users, which in 2003 was an enormous number of users. I mean, that was a really huge number of users for that time. However, the technology was not ready, and we didn't have enough cash on hand to really build it out. And so Flickr happened as a result of our underfundedness. We actually had no money left. You're broke. And it was a total Hail Mary. It was really a kind of phoenix from the ashes of defeat.
It's amazing.
Kind of thing. Yeah, it was bad. It was, you know, we were, you know, nobody was getting paid, and we had this idea to make this photo sharing site. So it was a save.
A brilliant save, and a lot of people you're widely credited with it being the first Web 2.0 site, the first really social site. You kind of the taxonomy, the tagging you created there has now gone on to hashtags and really become a vital part of the web. A lot of what the web is today started at Flickr. You went to Yahoo when Yahoo acquired it and left in 2008. When you look at what Marissa Mayer has done with Yahoo, do you look at it and say, "Gee, you know, maybe I should have stuck around"?
Well, I think that, you know, I was really happy to see the board put her in place. There was, you know, always the sense that there needed to be a product person running that company, and you know, I was very happy to see somebody going into that role.
And one of the very first things she did was acknowledge that Flickr was a jewel in Yahoo's crown, and put some resources behind it, which had been
had been sorely lacking, and, you know, terribly underfunded for all of its potential and the thriving community that was there. So yeah.
I still love Flickr. The fact that they made it free and you get a terabyte of storage, and they finally came up with an app, which is a great app. And it's like,
which is a great app. Yeah, it took a while, you know.
Yeah, but you know, why not have an app? That's a good
apps
thing.
We love apps. Yeah.
Then you started Hunch, and I think we talked to you when you started Hunch. This was
I'm not really sure. Maybe we did.
I think
maybe
you don't remember, but it was a long time ago. But the idea of Hunch was that people would. It was kind of a recommendation engine.
Yeah, we was recommendations, personalization on the internet, and
boy, that's never going anywhere. Nobody needs that. So eBay gave paid $80 million, I think was the number on Wikipedia for that, and that's the next step was Pinwheel. Why the change from Pinwheel to Findery?
Oh, there was a trademark conflict, and you know, we love the name. It was a beautiful name, actually. We had this wonderful logo also that I was deeply in love with, but you know. Can't have a trademark conflict.
Did somebody come to you with the idea, or were you just kind of thinking and you were in the shower and you said, you know, we ought to do this?
Well, you know, I was up camping somewhere near you know, Twit HQ up there. I was up in Northern California camping with my daughter. And
how old is she now?
6. And at the time she was, what, 3. And so We were camping, and we were in this sort of circle of redwoods trees and had fallen asleep. And I thought to myself, this is one of these moments you want to bottle up and keep forever.
Yes.
You know, how do I keep it forever? And how do I mark this spot? And, you know, I wasn't going to carve our names in the tree. So I, of course, being a technologist, thought there has to be a technological answer to this problem. And so, you know, it's not an original idea. And it wasn't even original to me at that time, because I was talking to Stuart, who is my, you know, Flickr co-founder and ex-husband. And he's like, no, you had that idea in 2005.
That's pretty funny. I had this whole,
you know, creation myth around this sort of camping trip in the redwoods, right? Which was, you know, a much more beautiful creation myth. He's like, no, you were talking about that when we were walking down Davie Street in Vancouver in 2000.
Yeah, this is why you never want to talk to exes. They just burst your bubble.
I know. Like, I was like, I had this wonderful story. It's a beautiful creation myth. So who knows? Like, I re-had the idea.
Well, but you probably also refined the idea, right? I mean,
you also have these sort of things that are, you know, I think as an entrepreneur, often it's really good to have a little notebook, and you keep writing things down. Mine, of course, is online, but you know, write down the ideas, and you know,
how do you do that? Do you use Evernote, or what do you use to keep your ideas?
I use Evernote. I use Google Docs. You know,
yeah.
I even use Mail, but I'm one of those people who also use paper. You know, this is one of my favorite tools right here.
Oh, a pencil. Wow, we haven't seen one of those in a few years.
I know.
Do you use a Moleskine notebook?
Yes.
You know, you really need a monocle. I have to...
Moleskine.
They say there's no way to pronounce it, but I vividly remember a time when they said, oh, no, it's Moleskine. So I think they've backed down.
Moleskine.
Or moleskin, or whatever you call it. I don't know. But they're beautiful little notebooks, and for writing down ideas. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I also really feel that the the how does your company start story is a bit of a red herring.
They're sure. But you know why you ask that question? First of all, because it's always a great story, even if it's not real.
Yeah,
it's the origin stories are great. We love origin stories, but also, I got to tell you, people look at you and they go, amazing serial entrepreneur, success after success, which is not easy. A lot of people have that first success kind of maybe even by accident. Sounds like yours was a little bit by accident. But when you do it again and again, then people start to say, okay, there's something in the process that we've got to pay attention to.
Well, the process, you know, the process is a lot of paying attention and, you know, and kind of being really engaged in the world, and I think being observant.
Are you thinking,
like, keeping a notebook?
Yeah, but but let me ask, dig a little deeper. Are you thinking, what would be a good business? Are you thinking, what would I want? What do people want? What are the criteria you use?
I mean, yes, you know, all of those things. I do think that you get an instinct after a while for this is something that, you know, this is something that would be meaningful. This is something that would be good. This is something that people would like. It's a thing that you, you can kind of see things that are sort of half ideas sometimes, that this is a good idea, but only me and my, you know, friends would be interested in this, or you can see these things that are, you know, universal. And one thing I think is true about technology is that people are people. People are the same people, you know, online and offline. And so, you know, the various human needs, you know, the need to connect, the need to communicate, you know, all of these things are universal. and, you know, kind of a good understanding of human nature and people is very important in designing good products. You know, and another thing is, getting is kind of seems counterintuitive because it's, you know, we're developing in tech, but, you know, being offline, being in places, you know, I honestly think that your being in Petaluma, for example, is a huge advantage in that, you know, being close enough to where all the action is, but just far enough away. One of the things I think was instrumental in the development of Flickr was that we were based in Vancouver, which is a bit off the, you know, kind of, you know, it's not the, you know, the center of the tech world. And so having a perspective on all of the tech that's happening down here, you have just a slightly outsider view. You're close enough in that you can understand the technology and have relationships with people and be just enough in, but you're just enough out so that you have a, you know, you can have a clearer mind, you know, more beginner's mind than someone who's enmeshed in it day in and day out.
That makes sense. Do you think as a woman you have a different point of view as well?
Oh, absolutely. I do. Yeah. You know, there's very few women, you know, still in tech. I mean, it's getting much better. There's tons of, you know, women founding companies. It's wonderful to see, you know, but you definitely do have a different perspective as a woman in a male-dominated industry such as tech. Definitely.
And being a sexist pig, I would say that part of that is that women are more social. And so it makes sense that social would be one of your biases, that if anything that you would do would have to be about communicating with other people.
Yeah, I like social. Social is definitely my...
Well, there's social guys, too. Not me.
My thing.
I mean, Flickr really, it wasn't a place to store photos. It was a place to share photos.
Yes, exactly.
And what made Flickr valuable was other people in a wonderful community that was supportive and positive, talking about what was good and bad about your photos, giving you feedback, sharing it with friends and family, but also with strangers who would help you with your vision. That is an amazing thing. And Flickr to this day remains this kind of...
Social place. Yeah,
it's social, I mean, and positively social. I mean, you look at YouTube comments versus Flickr comments, and you can see the difference.
Well, you know, that was very carefully cultivated, you know, and I really think that your software, if you're building social media software, you know, it really has succeeded when people write to you and tell you that, you know, they met their husband or their wife or their spouse or whatever on your service. I was giving a talk recently at Flipboard, and I mentioned this. I said, when people write to you and tell you that they, you know, met their, you know, wife on your product, then you really have succeeded. And then they go and have babies and, you know, blah, blah, wouldn't have happened except for your software. And then I, you know, someone stood up in the audience and they're like, me too. I met my husband.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's great.
That is neat. I don't know how many people have met on Flipboard, but Flipboard is much more social than it was. And so there's now this kind of outbound as well as inbound sharing and so forth.
They had met on Flickr.
Yeah, they met on Flickr. Yeah, that's where people meet.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at Findery on the web, which is a little bit of a different experience. For one thing, you've got a bigger screen so you can see more of a map and you can see what people are sharing. I love maps, and I think a lot of us love maps. So
we're totally like map nerds, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. There's certain things, pens, watches, maps, that are just draw people in and they go, I love maps. I just can look at maps all day.
So people with monocles like maps.
Now, I got to apologize for the monocle. I just got this. This is something one of our sponsors makes, and Warby Parker, and I just wanted to see if it worked for me. You're thinking it doesn't. Are you?
Well, look, you got a Hawaiian shirt on you. Be honest with yourself. Like, you have to change other aspects of your you know,
Star doesn't really work. Should I go with white tie and tails, you think?
You need to, you need to put in a, you know, whatever, tails.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the map. What's nice about the map interface for this particular thing is it's very easy to spot, geographical stories, right? People have placed things here. And so you can just click on them and say, oh, what was somebody talking about in Sacramento? Or what was somebody talking about in Fairfield the time I went to the Jelly Belly factory? Always a fun thing to do. It is both an advantage, but it's also a constraint, right? Everything they share here is going to be location-based?
Everything is location-based. That's the idea behind it. It's about the place that you are. So that's the constraint. And, you know, besides that constraint, it's not, we try not to limit what you can put in there, which is how we get all of the, you know, the cold cases and the celebrity gossip and the railroad fanatics and, you know, people who are, you know, leaving notes for their friends and family and poetry lovers, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it had a very Findery. The idea for Findery was very similar to me. It felt very similar in the sense of, you know, when I was kind of thinking about Flickr as a product, in that a photo is a kind of blank canvas in which you can put things, right? You can you know, tell stories, or you can record things, or, you know, there are archives, or there are communication tools, or there are things for sharing. And a note seemed to be a very similar, had similar properties. It was a constrained, you know, size. It's attached to a place. But then what you do with it is actually up to you. And so the you know, incredible creativity that our members have demonstrated in, you know, inventing you know, Findery, you know, is a constant source of excitement and amazement. I mean, this is really why I build social software, is that you know, people's self-expression and creativity are wondrous. You know, it's amazing.
I love the idea of sharing you know, perfect moments with your child, and when she grows up, she can go back and look at those moments. Can you put pictures on this too? Can't you?
You can put pictures, yeah. Certainly. And I would actually say the majority of notes have pictures on them. People can also add videos from Vimeo and YouTube, and audio files from SoundCloud. You know, Instagram photos, Flickr photos. You can import them into your software. And I think one of the big things actually is that when you're on the map on your phone, you can see photos that have been taken in the location. It'll show up on the map, so you can convert them easily into notes. So, you know, you don't need to be one of those, you know, socially awkward people who is typing up notes on Findery while you're sitting there at dinner. So you can just take a photo and it'll geolocate it, and then you can come back later and write a note. It's a good feature.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scrolling through notes in my area, which is kind of fun too, so I can see different posts people have put up here, which is great.
Petaluma.
And this Petaluma's got quite a few. What areas are popular?
So social software tends to grow in a very kind of unpredictable way. So, you know, we have a lot of notes. We have power users in, you know, places like Dubai and Tokyo and Sydney and, you know, gosh, Seattle. And
it clumps, and, you know, though, right? Because people
tend to clump.
Yeah.
It's and you know, it's interesting too. There's a lot of notes in London and UK and, you know, all over there, but we also have a lot of notes, for example, in Manchester, where we have a really, you know, kind of active user community there. And, you know, it grows in this sort of, you know, unpredictable way. So you may have a lot of stuff in Kansas City, but not a lot in Louisville. So, it grows in a way that you wouldn't necessarily be able to plan for or predict. But,
and do you envision people then whipping out their iPhone as they travel around the world and saying, well, let's see what's going on here? Is it going to be that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it is like that. I mean, it already is. Every time that I have gone on a trip, I have been, you know, really, you know, excited to find notes in, you know, the places where I'm going and things I wouldn't otherwise have known, you know. And we
the stuff is not, you know, the stuff you find in guidebooks. I got to tell you, it's
great.
It's not
the stuff you find in guidebooks. That's
it's very much personal and beautiful. So here's a guy who in Scotland posted a Robert Burns poem and talks about his dad. And this is really cool. And this is a journal entry that he's sharing with the world.
Somebody tweeted recently that Findery makes the world more poetic. Uh-huh. And I think that's to some extent true. Okay, you know, whatever. There's still, you know, the cold case murder mystery. So
that's
if you
an
want
interesting
to,
one too. Yeah.
If you want the world to be spookier, you can get it there. And I think one of the important things, one of the important features that is on Findery are the note maps. And note maps are clusters of notes or collections of notes that people put together. And so if you're a person who is interested in, you know, military history, or you're interested in, you know, mini golf, There are note maps that are dedicated to these subjects and these categories. And you're the kind of person who wants to just drive around the countryside looking for covered bridges, you know, or you're looking for, you know, this kind of wonderful interest, punk rock. You know, you're interested in, you're showing up in, you know, Chicago and you want to know what's the punk scene here. Those are collected into note maps. And, you know, this is one of the wonderful things about, you know, participatory media, you know, sites such as Findery, and was one of the wonderful things about Flickr as well, is that they just get better and better. Each note that gets added makes the world a little bit richer. And so I expect that over time, you will be able to find, you're interested in golf, you're interested in celebrity gossip, Kim Kardashian, you have, like, you know, you want to kind of focus in on, you know, these things as you arrive in different cities or different places, or even if you're going down to Sunnyvale, you know, California, kind of center of, you know, the tech industry here. And frankly, shall we say, not a very interesting city. And, you know, make Sunnyvale interesting to me.
Wow, would that be a good achievement? Jason, yeah. In our chat room is saying it's kind of like virtual geocaching. You're hiding an idea, a thought, a memory in a spot. And you find it on the map or as you walk by on your iPhone.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things that, you know, I got very excited. I was a very early Foursquare user, and I would get very excited when I would show up in a place and I would think that I would, you know, I was one of the first people in my social circle to have arrived there. And I would open up Foursquare, check in, and somebody would have left a tip there. You know, it was often just like, you know, get the shrimp scampi or something like that. But, you know, there was something about this sort of idea of a message in a bottle. You know, so much of what we get is so real time and so instantaneous that there remains this kind of magic when you find something that's been left in a place asynchronously. You know, like, you know, it's not synchronously, like that you find it, that someone has kind of passed through this place or been here and left a note for you to find. I mean, it's just, it's a kind of a magical thing that we rarely get these days.
Can also be a conversation starter. You left a note about the mystery barge, the Google mystery barge, and then people talked in the thread, in the comments about, well, what could this be? And I mean, I think it's a really, it's
exactly.
I love it. I love the free form nature of it. That's so exciting.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, obviously we only launched 4 days ago. Oh,
right.
My goodness. So 4 days ago. And, you know, already just the volume of notes has, you know, I don't even know if it's like increased like 1,000-fold. And, you know, in all around the world, you know, kind of.
The value of this, of course, comes from the network effect. The more people that use it, the more people will use it.
Yes.
And getting
and it just gets better over, you know, it gets better over time, just gradually. And, you know, if you look at a place like Manhattan, there's pretty much a note already on almost every block in Manhattan. It's remarkable. You know, and so we have a lot of filters that are running in order to surface the best notes so that you don't, you know,
that's
the
interesting.
Most interesting notes. So there's already an algorithm running, you know, to find the most notable notes in Manhattan, you know, in other really densely populated places.
Because when I get the map, it's probably a lot more dense than the notes that I'm seeing. But you have to break it up a little bit.
Yeah. So if you show the app on your phone, on the app, we've actually got these little green dots. So if you go somewhere that's really super populated on the app,
Okay, you're going to have to help me.
Hit the map.
Yes. And then squeeze it. And then I can see more of it. Okay.
And go to like somewhere like,
New York.
Go to New York.
Yeah.
Go to New York and, you know, all of those little green dots.
Yeah. These.
Are new.
Like here's
so
Brooklyn.
If you go to street level, you know,
oh,
New York.
Oh, I see. There's a lot of them.
There's so many notes. And so, you know, you really need a kind of an algorithm to help you out because it's really dense. They're really thick on the ground there.
I see little green dots, but then occasionally I'll see a picture. So is that your algorithm
Those are being surfaced. So those are the, you know, what's considered to be the most notable notes in that area. And then, you know, if you hit one of them, then you will, you know, just, you can go, you know, this is a really
fun.
Good note. Oh, you found a really good one.
I always make sure to point this building out to visitors because I'm shocked at how little attention it gets. But, of course, it's designed not to be noticed. It's 33 stories of rack space run by Verizon in an NSA listening post in a windowless 33-story building.
I used to live near this thing. Check that out. Nobody notices this building. I used to live down here in Tribeca. And look at this thing. Look at this. Look, doesn't it look like
1984, baby? Holy cow.
Windowless building.
What Isn't great discovery. Crazy? Now, all right, so I've discovered that I can heart it, obviously.
Should heart that thing.
Yeah, I did. And then I can comment on it as well if I wish, right? And read other comments. People have tagged it. This is great. You know what's interesting? She left this note 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we know it has a lot more kind of resonance than it did before.
It did before.
Wow.
It's a kind of an amazing thing. So those are the kinds of things that you'll discover as you're kind of going through the world, you know, kind of secrets about the world, hidden secrets and, you know.
I have a from purely selfish point of view, I want everybody to use this because I want to see more stuff. And I guess the best way to do that is for you to use it. You can sign up on the web, finderry.com. And there's an iOS app. Now, I'm using it on an iPad. It works perfectly well on the iPad, but of course, it's an iPhone app. And it would make sense if you have an iPhone to carry this around and look at stuff, but also take pictures and share and add stuff. I love this. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Katarina Fake is here, founder of Flickr, Hunch, and now Findery. She's also chairman of the board at Etsy, right?
That's correct.
And an advisor to a great many startups, an investor in some, too. So it must be fun for you to see all this new ferment happening. I'd love to know what you think of the world in 2014. We will find out in just a moment. Talking about startups, one of our guests on Triangulation almost 2 years ago, Ed Harris, former CEO at Intuit and PayPal, started a little company called Personal Capital. As always, I signed up right away. One of the best things about doing this show, I signed up right away. Now here we are a year later, and Personal Capital is better and better all the time. Personal Capital solves a problem a lot of people have: how to keep track of your money and where it's going and what your investments are and what your loans are. I mean, keeping track of your net worth is tricky. You've got stocks, you've got your 401k, I hope, a retirement plan, you've got bank accounts, charge cards, loans, and they're all on different sites, all with different usernames and passwords. It would really be nice to collate it all into one beautiful interface, a dashboard, if you will, and that's exactly what Personal Capital does. It also takes a look at who you're paying or how much you're paying to manage your money, and it can help you if you're paying too much. It can give you great advice, tailored investment information. One single screen, and guess what? It's free. It's free. PersonalCapital.com/triangulation. It'll just take a minute to set it up, and all of a sudden you'll be seeing so much more about where you stand. And look, we've all got a plan for retirement. You don't want to work till you're 101. Maybe you do, but that's part of it too, isn't it? It's time to start planning ahead. And I think a lot of people who are younger in the audience go, oh, I don't need that. That's for old people. No, this is the time. Start thinking about it now. Believe me, I wish I had. PersonalCapital.com/triangulation. It's free and the smart way to grow your money. PersonalCapital.com/triangulation. Nobody's going to take care of you in your old age except you. You got to do it. Katarina Fake. What?
I said the young you has got to take care of the old you.
The old you. I know. And I think back, you know, when I was in my 20s, if I'd just put a little bit away into a 401k, how much
or bought some Apple stock.
Oh, well, that. Yeah. Yeah, oh, that. Do you invest in tech stocks?
I don't. I've only ever lost money in the stock market.
Yeah. So you make money by making good things that people want to use. Hey, that's a good way to do it.
That's kind of another way to do it. Yeah, I've never had much success. I just don't have the patience or wherewithal to really learn about, you know, individual stocks. It's just not my cup of tea. I like startups and I like investing in startups. You know, I was an investor in Etsy early, and that was, you know, one of my, you know, really good investments. Investor in Kickstarter turned out to be another good one.
That worked out all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Billion. Did you see that? Billion pledges.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Tweak that announcement. Yeah. Really amazing.
And
stuff.
I just learned.
All for creativity. Yeah.
Well, that's what's great about it. And, you know, I think people forget that the Kickstarter founders really were focused on how do we facilitate creative, artists to get their stuff made without some, you know, without a Medici coming along and writing a big check. Everybody can support the arts. And, of course, it's become almost a marketplace now of products, of new product ideas, but still lots of movies, records. You know, Veronica Mars is coming out next month.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's really, you know, one of the things that I think has been, you know, a great privilege in working in technology like this is being able to, you know, be involved with companies like Kickstarter and Etsy. These are the things that I really care about. You know, my background is not in tech. I'm not a...
You're a designer by training?
CS major. So, interestingly, my background, you know, was in art. I was a fine artist. I was a painter.
Oh, really?
And
yeah.
I didn't have any marketable skills. You know, I moved out here to... You know,
My mother and my sister are painters. My sister has an MFA from Columbia, and I think they would agree, no marketable skills.
No marketable skills. You know, I studied poetry. I don't regret any of those things.
No, it's great.
No, and I do it all again, and I think that it actually makes me a better technologist and a better product designer.
Right.
And so I came out to San Francisco in 1994, and this hot new web thing was going on, and I decided that I had some aesthetic skills, and so I could translate my skills in art and my training in art to do design. So I started doing web design, and took it from there.
Are you? I mean, I guess really your artistic sensibility still plays. I mean, goodness, nothing becomes a success these days unless it looks great. The user interface is clear, and you got to have the design.
Yeah, and it's been proven time and time again that great design is necessary for successful products.
Yeah.
So that's been one of our strong suits. But also really creative businesses that bring out people's desire to express themselves. And look at Flickr. Findery is a very similar kind of value proposition. Etsy and Kickstarter. All of these things are about human creativity, human scale creativity. Taking the artistic expression of humankind back from whatever broadcast TV or like the big networks.
Well, I'm all for that. that's kind
Web
of my 2. Idea 0. Too. Yeah,
exactly.
Not just Web 2.0, but World 2.0.
World 2.0, whatever, triangulation versus CNN. Like you've got
right.
You've got your audience. You've built up a really great thing, Leo.
Thank you. And we get to talk about stuff that maybe mainstream media doesn't know about or think about, like art, that is important anyway.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And I think, and also like I was saying earlier on the show, I was talking about how, there's very basic human needs that don't change and technology can enhance them. And one of the things that I think is one of those needs is the need for self-expression.
Yeah, very much. So do you look for, I guess, am I thinking about this, in every respect, the stuff that you create is all about the users putting stuff into it, expressing themselves in it. You always create a notebook for people.
Yes, that's kind of one of I'm a notebook, as my kind of previously mentioned love of pencils demonstrates that I'm never far from one. So these are tools that I like to build.
I always wonder, we're in such an interesting time where people like you have a scope for expression that just wouldn't have been around 50 years ago, let alone 100 or 200 years ago. And I always wonder what would these people have done 100 years ago? Would you have been a painter, an artist?
Yeah. So I do think that there were a lot of ways that people expressed themselves. So I did a talk once for the Yahoo sales team when Flickr had just been acquired, and we were talking about how they said, please explain Web 2.0 to the all the 2,000 salespeople at the Yahoo sales annual sales event, right?
Yeah,
explain what is Web 2.0. And so what I did was I put together the slide deck. It was one of my favorite presentations I ever did, and I chose as my model of Web 1.0 80s hair bands, like Poison, and I had like seventies, you know, like
yeah, big hair bands. Got it.
Kiss, right? Like
White
Kiss
Snake.
White Snake. Yes, like this represented sort of top down. You know, this is the media telling you what to watch, right? Telling you what to listen to,
right?
And then it like I said, well, Web 2.0 is actually going back to a prior version of self-expression where you would just grab your mandolin,
right,
and you would go down to, you know, the pub or frankly your living room and hang out there and like play the, you know, whatever, you know, play your mandolin or the jug or the washboard and just sit around and sing around a campfire. And that was a different kind of, it's still music, right? It's not White Snake. But, you know, and then I said, you know, what Flickr's doing is it's like you're making your own mode of expression. You're making your own music. You're mm-hmm. you know, uploading, you know, these pictures of your life, and you're making your own media. Right.
From our kind of point of view, I think that's exactly what I think about that. Mass media is really a aberration. It's a little blip in the overall story of humans and of media, the idea that you would make, just like mass beer production, that you would make huge quantities of media, and it would be very top down because it's very capital intensive, and everybody's just supposed to sit and consume it, and there's a handful who get to make it, and we're going back to that old artisanal form of media, where it's created by humans for humans in a smaller scale, beer and everything else.
Etsy's the, you know, marketplace where you can get your soap and your soap and your shoes and from the people who actually make them. And, you know, that's something that I've always cared very much about, is that form of, you know, market, you know, a real market, you know, in the traditional sense of market. And I think that you're right. I think it's a bit of a historical aberration when the sort of the mass culture events, you know, whatever, Best Buy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe we can turn our back on that. On the other hand, there's this huge efficiency of scale when you have a Best Buy store or
you know,
a Costco.
You need roads and railways. You know, these things were, you know, needed and necessary, and, you know, still are. So
there's room for both.
There's room for both.
But humans, it's kind of, the big scale stuff is kind of dehumanizing. Humans operate at we work better at a smaller scale.
Human scale, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, somebody was recently asking me about, you know, Bitcoin markets. And I'm like, you asked me earlier about the stock market, and I kind of see them as being similar. I'm like, I'm about farmers markets, you know?
Bitcoin market. I want a farmer's market. Show me the heirloom tomatoes. There. Now you got my interest. I like that. It's very refreshing and interesting. And what's very interesting is when you marry it with technology, which, you know, sometimes technology can feel very sterile and dehumanizing. And maybe that's what happened with Web 2.0. Suddenly it became human. And the fundamental thing was communication, it was about communication.
Exactly. Person to person. And it's, you know, it's something that I care very deeply about, and, you know, have tried to make my career very much be about, you know, humanizing technology.
Very nice. So findry.com, you can sign up on the web. You can also get the iPhone app and Android soon.
Soon? Yeah.
Do you think about Windows Phone at all?
Well, even Windows, you know, Windows is going to Android. So, you know.
There's a lot of Windows Phone users going.
Were you in CES? But, you know, whatever. You know, I have a Windows Phone. I've got like a Lumia, you know.
That's whatever. A great phone, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just needs apps. Phone. It needs Findery.
It needs Findery. Yeah. It's a beautiful phone. It's really, I mean, I was blown away by it, frankly. I have to say, I was wildly impressed. Really good phone.
But that's always and it's a tough decision, and sometimes it's a brutal decision. When you're a business, you have to do things that make sense from a business point of view, and you have to go where the market is. And if it's a tiny market, you can't devote more resources to it than it's worth devoting, I guess.
Yeah. So,
do you make that kind of decisions? Do you have a board that helps you with that? Do you have
We're 12 people.
What is your role there? Are you the CEO, president, and COO, and or are you just kind of a higher level visionary?
I'm the CEO. You know, I'm the CEO, chief product officer, COO, you know, janitor.
You're doing it all.
You know, I do.
Do you prefer that? Now, I know you have a different kind of role with the startups that you invest in, where you're, you know, you're more an advisor.
Sure. But, you know, I like small, you know, businesses and companies that are, you know, this size. You know, I really do enjoy, you know, this is the fillet of a startup. It's the best part.
And it does it get to a point sometime where 12 people is nice and small, but when it gets to 25, 35, what point does it go? Yeah, I'm not
so
interested.
Well, you know about, you know, the Dunbar number. You know, Dunbar number is the point at which it becomes cognitively difficult to keep up with everybody. And so somewhere around, you know, and I've been at companies that grew from, you know, 20 people to 150 people. And it's very painful. It's like, it can be a very painful point. And, you know, at 150 people, things start to get, you start to have management and hierarchies and it starts to become a more traditional company.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a startup. I love startups. You know, I'm a kind of a startup person.
Now, I know you're not going to want to talk about this, so just pretend nobody's listening here. But do you think do you think about, okay, at some point, Findery, I'm going to sell it and then do the next thing? Or is that really not in your...
I mean, that is not something that you ever really plan to do. And sometimes it happens, and sometimes it's the right decision for the company. And, you know, gosh, with Flickr, we were kind of falling down. You know, it was 2004, and, you know, our servers were crashing like crazy, and we needed a lot of help. You know, and you know, I think that it's not something that I would like to do or plan to do with Findery. I, you know, hope to take it, you know, all the way, and that's always the hope, I think. And
what does all the way mean, though?
All the way is, you know, kind of build it into like a big and thriving and self-sustaining company. You know, right now we're venture funded, and that's never a good feeling, because then you always have to go out cap in hand you know, venture capitalists. You know, God bless them for giving us the money to start it up and keep us going. But you want to wean yourself off of the, you know, supply and be an independently running, self-sustaining, good business. And that's I think a goal that every startup should have, and not plan. You know, a lot of startups, you know, from the outside look as if they're started, you know, built to flip.
Right. Oh yeah. You know, well, especially when you see $16 billion for WhatsApp, that just fuels that, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And the press goes crazy.
Well,
and then
you got a lot of people who get into it to make money, which is not the way to come at
this. Well, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, you can certainly make, you know, you can certainly make money in startups, but you're more likely to lose your shirt. I mean, it's really, you know, it's
like
not
a winery. You don't start it to make money. You do it because you love it.
You do it because you love it, because you're otherwise unemployable, and you have a...
Are you unemployable, Katarina?
You know, I try. You know, I went to Yahoo, and they have me in all of these sort of executive development programs and whatnot. But
no interest.
What can you do?
Is it not wanting to work for somebody? Is that part of it?
No, it's like a tiger can't change her stripes. You know, it's kind of like I've never thrived in institutions, and you know, I was a terrible student too. I mean, gosh.
And now you have an honorary degree from RISD, so take that.
So there you go.
And
the new school.
We're talking to Katarina Fake. One more question when we come back. I just want to talk about monetization, because that's a nasty topic. But you did bring it up. You said we want to get out from under investors. That's a tricky thing. You're in an unusual position. Let's talk about it in a second. As long as we're talking about money, I want to talk about another startup that has a very interesting idea behind it. You mentioned Kickstarter. We're in a new world of money. What about peer-to-peer lending? I mean, the whole notion of going to a bank, going in hat in hand, filling out a form, getting them to give you money is changing. We have something called peer-to-peer lending, basically a marketplace. This is what Prosper does. They're a marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with people who have money to lend. Eliminate the middleman. It's really a brilliant idea. If you knew that in 72 hours you could have as much as $35,000 to do stuff that you need, what would you do? Would you pay off your high-interest credit cards? Get that off your back. Start a business. You know, this is a way to start a business. You don't. There are many ways to fund a business. It doesn't have to be venture capital. You could do it with simple a simple loan, a peer-to-peer loan. Here's what you do. Visit right now. Visit prosper.com/twit. You could fill out an easy online application. You give them some simple details. You'll get a rate instantly. And I know some people say, "Oh, I don't want to do that." But no, getting your free quote does not affect your credit. So it's, you know, it's completely private to do this. There are now more than 2 million members, over $900 million in funded loans. This is a success. This is the new way, and I love it. I really think it's a great idea. If you want to try it right now, Prosper's offering for a limited time Twit viewers a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. I want you to visit prosper.com/twit. That way that kind of lets them know, oh, yeah, they heard about it on Triangulation. Up to $35,000 in just 3 days, and you get a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Prosper.com, not affiliated with Amazon, obviously. For gift card details, visit prosper.com/twit. And we do thank them for their support of Triangulation. It's really, I love the world we live in today. Things like Kickstarter and, you know, Kiva. And I mean, we just, it's everything is being reinvented. Now, you mentioned getting out from under the back of the investors. This is one of the traditional pitfalls of startups, is that you go out, you get money, and now the investors say, where's your exit strategy? Are you now you know, in the situation where you don't have to worry about that?
No, you always have to. I mean, I think you always have to worry about that. You know, there's
so do they put pressure on you to kind of monetize and have exits or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think that what – You know, we went out of the gate. We thought it was very important. It's actually very important, I think, especially of social media, to declare at the outset what your business is. And so when we first came out of beta, we said, you know, we plan on having an advertising supported service. We are, you know, planning on having, currently our idea about this is that we have sponsored notes.
You don't have that yet, right?
Nope, but you know, we came out of the gate and made sure that everybody knew that from the get-go, you know, that this was the plan, because you don't want, you know, everybody kicking and screaming and saying like, oh no, you know, my expectations for when I signed up for the service have been, you know,
right,
undermined.
Right.
And so I think that's a very interesting, you know, important thing that you should do as a social media developer, that be a very important thing that you kind of say from the outset.
You have, in effect, an agreement with your users.
You know, yeah, you don't want to upset their expectations.
Right.
You don't want to, you know, have them join and under, you know, false pretenses. You want them to kind of know what your plans are for the business and how you're planning on turning it into a business. And so, you know, here's the thing, though, that happened, you know, has been happening over the, you know, time that we've been developing the software is, you know, people have found much more interesting uses for Findery than we came up with.
Right.
And then this is like kind of one of the reasons I love developing software like this, is that you think your sponsored notes are your business strategy and your business plan, and that's going to be very effective. But in you know, it turns out that people are using your software in a much more interesting way than that. Businesses are using it in a much more interesting way than that. You know, some examples are, we have, you know, there's like a clothing company, American Eagle Outfitters, huge popular clothing company. And they were, you know, they've been using Findery to not show people, you know, whatever, sexy jeans photography, but people behind the scenes shooting, all of the people modeling the jeans in Costa Rica, like kind of behind the scenes, kind of shots. And here we are in Sayulita, Mexico, and here we are in Costa Rica shooting these, and using it in a much more interesting way to tell a story about their brand, you know, American Eagle Outfitters, which I think is really, really very smart of them. You know, there's a company here in, you know, San Francisco, Tacolicious, which is a taco purveyor. They have a place in Palo Alto in San Francisco. You know, they have this whole set of, you know, these are the places that we source our tequila. Here are the places where our, you know, tortillas come from. Really wonderful kind of stories behind that. You know,
that's the group, smart way to do this. Instead of popping up a banner ad, is engaging with an audience in a human way, and having it be a social interaction, having it be peers talking to peers instead of saying, buy our product, buy our product, buy our product. If you can make that happen here, that's going to be one. It's kind of native content for Findery.
Exactly. And it's sort of, and I think that it's one of those things where it's sort of, you know, win-win-win, like the platform benefits and the American Eagle benefits and American Eagle customers benefit. You know, it's one of those things where, so, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you pay attention, you know, we had this kind of out of the gate, you know, sponsored notes concept, but like, who knows? Like, we, you know, people are smarter than we are. So, you know,
I'm just thinking of my friend, be humble
enough to admit it.
Jim Tebow, who's a famous skateboarder and has a skate company, Deluxe, that's huge. And he really gets a lot of mileage out of Instagram posting pictures of him and his friends skating. And it's very subtle advertising, in effect. That's why people have Twitter accounts and Instagram accounts. If they use it right, it promotes what you're doing. But it's really also about sharing your love of skateboarding. And I could see him creating a note. What do you call the notebooks?
Just note maps.
Note maps.
Yeah.
Of skate parks, for instance, things like that. It doesn't have to have a lot of advertising at all.
No, and, you know, the other thing, too, is that, you know, you can't fake it on Findery.
Right.
You know, you can't, like, it's really hard to fake it. Like, people know when you're being insincere or you're talking down to them or you're marketing to them. People have a very sensitive, instrument to detect marketing-iness. And, you know, you have to actually have a real story to tell and a real, you know, kind of voice to tell it with. And,
Have brands approached you?
Yeah, we've got tons of, you know, whatever, we're 12 people. So, and we just launched our app.
You're kind of busy right now.
So, you know, we've got a bunch of, we have a ton of, you know, potential advertisers to talk to about things like this. But, you know, I feel like, you know, we want to have, you know, as much as possible, you know, real communication happening here.
And that's the new form of advertising. It's the new form of talking. It's what Clue Train was all about. Markets are conversations. It's about conversing with your customers. What an idea. What a concept. We're going to wrap it up. I just want to show people. This is the new iPhone app. Just came out on Thursday. Get it. And I'll give you an example. This is the Discover tab. You go to Sonoma County. Jessica says, I have a little place up in Santa Rosa. This is where we are. Favorite places in the wine country. You go and you view the notes. It's beautiful. The notes come alive in the map. And you can go and zoom in. And you can read her notes about specific things. It's just, this is... It's very personal. It's very beautiful. Look, there's Katerina Fink, historical marketing.
And you know what? You can actually add, here's another important thing about note maps, is that you can gather together other people's notes into the note maps. So you can make your collection of, you know, railroad history or punk rock or Kim Kardashian or whatever you're interested in and make a note map. Exactly.
Right.
You can
Doesn't have to be like, your stuff.
It could be like Leo's Sonoma County.
Yeah. And I'll take stuff from Jessica and from Katerina and everybody else. Yeah. This is so neat. This is just really beautiful. I hope people take this seriously and kind of start to interact with it and play with it. Because, of course, the more everybody uses it, the more valuable it becomes, the more people will use it. And it's the very virtuous circle that could make this thing so wonderful and useful. Findery, it's a free app on iPhone. Soon on Android. I'm pushing. Soon. And then, of course, on the web. In fact, I bet you a lot of people end up maybe doing some quick notes and then elaborating and going back to their account on the website where it's easier because you've got a keyboard and you can elaborate and do that. So it's also findery.com on the web. And I think it's a really wonderful idea. I did when we talked about it with you 2 years ago. And I'm glad to see it's public now, and I hope everybody signs up and plays with it. It is free, after all. Thank you, Katerina.
Thanks, Leo.
Always a
nice
pleasure.
Nice talking to you.
Yep.
At
Katerina on Twitter. You must follow her with a C. And, of course, on Findery. We do Triangulation now on Mondays. I hope you'll stop by. We do it 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 2000 UTC. Note the new time because we are now in summertime. So it's an hour earlier than it used to be if you're not in summer. Figure it out. 2000 UTC. Just do whatever math you have to do. Do stop by because we love having the live content from the chat room, the interaction. Frankly, you give me great questions for all of our guests. And we do have some great guests. Is it next week we're going to do a string theory with Michio Kaku? Then I'm going to really need you next week. Get your string theory questions ready. I've interviewed Michio many times, one of the most enthusiastic an exciting and fascinating guy, a physicist who can explain string theory. What a concept. That's next week on Triangulation. Get each and every episode, if you can't watch live on demand, at twit.tv/TRI. We have audio and video, and you know, either form is fine. You know, do whatever's convenient for you. You can also watch on YouTube, youtube.com/triangulation. And, you know, the best thing to do, I would say, is subscribe if you've got iTunes or, you know, the Xbox music app and or the podcast app on your Windows phone, Dog Catcher, any of the Instacast, any of the podcast apps. You'll be able to find Triangulation and subscribe to it. That way you'll automatically get it every week. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our producer, Kostin Bondi, for putting together a great list. Tanya, I know, is starting, Tanya Hiles, starting to help out, too, with some of the booking. I've been told that our guest from last week, the inventor of Centipede, a rare woman in Silicon Valley in the 1980s, had to reschedule, but she will be back in a few weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that. And if you ever played that game, if you still have the wrist action on the trackball and the button, you're going to want to watch us talk about Centipede in a couple of weeks. Thanks to John Slonina, our TD. Thanks most of all to you for watching. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time on Triangulation.
So in the interim, suddenly you've become a villain? Like, so
all the hipsters wear monocles now, don't you know?
No hipsters, no. It's an instant indication that you are not hip.
Yeah. $1 million.
Really? It's not that high, is it? Oh, what? No, I mean...